Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Saturday morning Dhamma class at Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, from May 20th, 2017. My Dhamma talk on our Sangha discussion is the first of three classes on what is meant by becoming in relation to dependent origination. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation. Thank you. Peace. So just a little background on the talk today. The Buddha awakened to dependent origination, which states from ignorance through 12 observable causative links, all manner of confusion, deluded thinking, and suffering arises. And he the ignorance that he's talking about is specific to the Four Noble Truths, which is his very first teaching that he gave shortly after he awakened, about 2 weeks after. And I know you've heard me say this before. Everything he would teach for the next 45 years of his life was in relation to the Four Noble Truths, and so that we could interrupt these links that cause all manner of suffering. And there's a line that I'll read in here that has been confusing for many, many people ever since the time of the Buddha. One of the suttas is called the Bhavan Sutta that I probably won't get to today, where Ananda, who was the Buddha's cousin and chief attendant for many years, asked the question, what do you mean by becoming? What does this mean? And over the years, because there has been no modifier often, I think because until I came along, there's been no modifier to the word becoming. Great license has been taken to mean all kinds of things, depending on what the particular person is holding in mind. But the Buddha is very clear on what becoming means. So let me just read the dependent origination, the links anyway. From ignorance, remember, from ignorance of the Four Noble Truths, as a requisite condition come fabrications. Fabrications, the simplest explanation of those, simply assumptions that we make about ourselves in relation to the world. Now remember, those assumptions are based on ignorance, so they're ignorant assumptions. They're not based in any reality. From those fabrications, as a requisite condition, comes consciousness. And that's another important line. The Buddha is referring here not to some grand cosmic consciousness that is all-knowing or even has the potential to become all-knowing. He's talking about an ongoing pattern of thinking that is resting on those assumptions and rooted in ignorance. From consciousness, as a requisite condition, comes name and form. Name and form, the Pali words are nama-rupa, which, again, the simplest explanation is self-referential views. We have these views that we create about ourselves rooted in these assumptions, and we reflect and attach those views to this physical form. We identify nama-rupa, name and form. We identify this form as these assumptions rooted in ignorance. From name and form, as a requisite condition, comes the sixth sense base. The sixth sense base is simply our five physical senses and that ongoing consciousness that is rooted in ignorance. And so now, if you look at how the Buddha is taking us here, we've created assumptions about ourselves that have created a pattern of thinking that are rooted in self-reflective views. And every time now that something comes in contact with our senses, to this thing that we've created out of ignorance, we're reinforcing that depending on how we're viewing this contact. Is that clear? So we've become a sponge for ignorance, in essence. And I know that's a pretty depressing way of saying it. I don't think I've ever said it before. And again, what the Buddha's not saying, and I'm not saying, that we are completely ignorant people. In relation to the Four Noble Truths, which I think is probably the most important truth we can develop, we are sponge for ignorance. We want to keep this ignorance going. An aspect of ignorance is the need to ignore anything that would challenge that ignorance. That's conditioned thinking. The modern term is confirmation bias. We're biased towards seeing things in a way that confirms those assumptions that we've created out of ignorance. From contact... You have a question?
I just carried that out, which is the non... which is as you let each one of those things go, it becomes less of a self, less of a
yes.
self, less of a self until there's no self.
Well, until there's no ignorant self, not no self at all.
Yeah.
The Buddha never taught that annihilation. But that's exactly it. And every time... when one of these links is recognized and unraveled, another word to use is recognized and abandoned, that's why they're called links in a chain. The whole chain of dependencies falls apart. And again, don't get too over-analytical about these chains because you can just get lost in the details. That's not really important. You don't need to profoundly understand dependent origination to awaken. It's enough to understand, and that's the reason why the Buddha taught this, that it is ignorance of Four Noble Truths that lead to confusion, delusion, and suffering. But the links are the foundation for what I'm going to talk about in a minute. From contact as a requisite condition comes feeling, and in this sense, feeling is not just physical pain or emotional, mental upsets. It's really any type of movement in the mind, any distraction in the mind, any agitation in the mind that is rooted in ignorance and fueled by assumptions. As from feeling as a requisite condition comes craving. So now we've established this self in our own minds that has needs. And now that this self is established, we start craving for continuing establishment and continuing pleasure to this thing that we've created. Another aspect of craving is aversion. So things that we find threatening or disappointing in any way, we create an aversion to those. We don't want them. That's another form of craving. From craving as a requisite condition comes clinging and maintaining. So now we know what we like and we know what we don't like based on these assumptions. And we start holding on to anything that makes us feel good, and we create aversion to everything that we think might threaten us. But most importantly, we start clinging to this self-referential identity. In a sutta that I won't talk about, it's called the Nagara Sutta, where the Buddha describes his own awakening. He talks about getting stuck in that feedback loop between self-referential views and ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance. That's just another way of saying conditioned thinking. We get stuck in this conditioned thinking, and we want to ignore anything that would threaten that ignorance.
Can you just say that one more time? Or you don't know what you're...
We go, I never know what I say. I just hope it comes out.
I can't say, okay, I'm like, I don't know what I said.
So, in the Nagara Sutta, I think I remember. In the Nagara Sutta, the Buddha talked about his own awakening, and in that sutta, he talks about getting stuck in this feedback loop between self-identification, self-referential views, and that ongoing thinking rooted in ignorance. Can't get out of it. How do we get out? And now, again, that's another way of describing conditioned thinking. We're conditioned or we're conditioned towards seeing things that affirm those assumptions rooted in ignorance. And again, an aspect of ignorance, an aspect of conditioned mind, is to ignore anything, including Four Noble Truths, that would challenge that ignorance. That's an aspect of clinging. Clinging and maintaining means that now we're spending our entire lives mostly, even though we might be doing other things that aren't directly related to that, they're shrouded by or obscured by that need for continual maintenance of self-referential views rooted in ignorance. And often we make choices in our life that are based on that rather than what might be wise and skillful choices that are framed by the Eightfold Path, particularly the right view, right action, and right livelihood. That's how the path extracts us from this process. That's how the path directly interrupts these 12 links of dependent origination.
Sometimes when you're going through something like that, there's this little blip that says, you know, maybe turn left instead of doing the usual right turn. And then this is where I'm finding like a daylight comes through. When I don't resist that little blip, even though it may seem illogical and insane or you know or something, I just go with it, the blip, and it's an entirely new world.
So that blip, if it's motivated by the Eightfold Path, speaks directly to what this whole thing becoming is about. Because if that blip is framed by the Eightfold Path, then you're pointing yourself towards becoming awakened, and away from continually becoming or having more experiences rooted in ignorance. Each moment holds the potential. This is a direct teaching to karma too. I won't get into that today. Each moment holds the potential to become increasingly more ignorant and more prone to suffering and disappointing experiences, or to become awakening. And we shouldn't get too fixated about that. Again, that's what the framework of the Eightfold Path is, to bring mindfulness of what's occurring in this moment. What is most beneficial to me towards awakening, towards developing a life of lasting peace and happiness? Because of conditioned thinking, because of the need for a conditioned mind to ignore anything that would challenge it, we need a way of developing refined mindfulness to see what's occurring, to see through that feedback loop, that veil of ignorance that's obscuring reality and obscuring a life of lasting peace and happiness.
When it says life is the teacher, a part of this is, I mean, I find in the mindfulness of it, I have to stop and apologize. Because, like, yesterday I got angry, I was hot, tired, angry, lonely, and tired, not lonely, but hot and tired and hungry. That's, anyway.
I felt the same way.
And I it wasn't very pleasant once or twice with this client, and I had to stop and say, boy, I am hungry, hot, and tired. Please, please forgive my behavior, you know, my what I said or something like that. And, I mean, that's, I'm not a saint or anything like that, but that's the mindfulness of it, that I just, when I see it like that, I can't just leave it.
Yeah, and we need a well-concentrated mind, most of us, and a certain level of refined mindfulness to simply see that. And it's an important aspect when we cause distress for another person to simply acknowledge our part in it. Keeps us free of dragging that stuff around. From craving as a requisite condition comes clinging and maintaining, and now we're getting to the part. From clinging and maintaining as a requisite condition comes becoming. So notice the sequence, and notice the positioning of the word becoming. And I wish there was a modifier. I wish the Buddha used a modifier. And I suspect that I don't know enough of the Pali language to do the research to find out if the Buddha put a modifier after becoming, but I suspect there was, and it was left out because it allows for speculation, but I'm speculating about that. The important thing is to look at this in context. From clinging and maintaining as a requisite condition comes becoming. What's the Buddha talking about? He's talking about ignorance giving rise to assumptions that cause confusion, delusion, and suffering in our lives. Clinging and maintaining continues that becoming experience of becoming more ignorant, prone to more suffering, more confusion, more delusion, and suffering. And when you look at it in that context, it's really not, it really doesn't need a modifier, because this is what the Buddha is teaching. But again, I'm craving for a modifier here. From becoming as a requisite condition comes birth. Now, the Buddha is not talking about physical birth alone, although that's an important aspect that I may or may not get into. What he's talking about, and again, keep this in context, he's talking about the moment-by-moment unfolding of our life and what we're giving birth to in each moment. And if what we're giving birth to in each moment is rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths, again, it can only become more ignorant. But if we are developing the Dhamma, if we have developed some concentration that supports the refined mindfulness to hold in mind the Eightfold Path, and again, this isn't a fix it, oh, where am I now, right speech, right? To develop the Eightfold Path as the framework, as a gentle framework for our life, then what's occurring to us will be framed by that, and we can make mindful decisions to become less ignorant and more awakened. Again, that's the modifier that we should be putting in becoming. And I'm going to read one sutta today. In this talk, because there's three suttas that I'm referring to, I'll be giving the talks on becoming today, Tuesday, and next Thursday. Is everybody with me so far? That's pretty good, because it is a little bit detailed and somewhat hard to follow. But so let me just read that again. From becoming as a requisite condition comes birth. From birth as a requisite condition comes aging, sickness, death, sorrow, regret, pain, distress, and despair. That's the Buddha's description of dukkha. From giving birth, that birth rooted in ignorance is a requisite condition. It's required in order to develop suffering in our lives. If we eliminate the requirement, suffering cannot follow, at least according to the Buddha, which who I happen to believe pretty strongly. So the whole point of becoming is, what are we going to become in this next moment? It's our choice. There's nothing imposed on us from some grand cosmic scene, scenario, or an individual creator being who might we might try to appeal to intervene in our behalf. There's no grand cosmic system that's working on us or against us. In this moment, what are we going to become? More awakened? Or are we going to contribute to our own suffering? Second Noble Truth says, craving originates and clinging perpetuates individual contributions to suffering. It's up to us whether we want to keep it going. That's the whole point of becoming. So, let me read the first sutta in this series. And these talks will all be online, too, if you don't make the other classes. So there's an introduction that I don't think I need to read because I've laid it out pretty good, I hope. This is called the Loka Sutta. And this was at one of the rare suttas where the Buddha didn't present it to anyone. This is, he's recounting his own thought process shortly after awakening. And it's really remarkable, even in just that historical sense. But then what, think about what he's reflecting on here. The newly awakened Siddhartha, now a Buddha, was enjoying the peace of release of awakening. Established in concentration, he observed the world around him. He noticed human beings aflame with the fires born of the defilements of passion, aversion, and deluded consciousness. Realizing the significance of what he was seeing, he had these thoughts. The world is aflame. Rooted in ignorance, the world is afflicted by sensory contact and perceives suffering as self. It's really the whole ball of wax. We create an identity, an attached identity, to suffering itself. When the Buddha describes awakening, he says, birth is suffering, sickness is suffering, aging is suffering, death is suffering, not getting what is desired is suffering, getting what is not desired is suffering, and there's some other phrases in there depending on where you're reading this. And then he always concludes that with saying, in short, the five clinging aggregates are suffering. The five clinging aggregates are simply, it simply describes the personal experience of suffering. We're clinging now to suffering. And notice that there's no distinction between, in suffering, in dukkha, between getting what we want and getting what we don't want. We would consider it's only the second part, wouldn't we? That everything would be great if I could just get everything that I want. And the world would be great if everybody would just do what I want. Suffering is both of those things, and it's clinging to the view of so-called positive experiences and clinging to the view that I know how the world should be. Why is that significant? Because dukkha occurs. The world can't be any different than it is right now. But if we really want to have a profound effect on the world, I think the person had the most profound effect on the world that continues today is the Buddha. If we want to bring peace to the world, we'll create peace in our own minds first. I'm getting a little bit off track with that little speech there. But so getting back to it. The world is aflame, rooted in ignorance. The world is afflicted by sensory contact and perceives suffering as self. Rooted in ignorance, remember dependent origination, rooted in ignorance, it misunderstands self and becomes anything other than self. What does that mean, become anything other than self? It means we've created an ongoing process. Another way of describing becoming is the becoming of stress arising and passing away. When we attach ourselves to stress, when we identify ourselves as suffering, we're continuing that view. And continuity now is obscuring the impermanence of all things. Let me read that again.
Is that craving for becoming and craving for not becoming?
Yes.
The same thing.
Yes. Craving for becoming and craving for not becoming. The arising and the passing away of suffering. So another way of looking at that in a practical way is something happens we don't like and we can't wait for it to end. But again, that's an identity that something is occurring to me. Craving for becoming, craving for an experience that gives us pleasure, craving for an experience that establishes me firmly in an environment where it can't be established. But once we create the misunderstanding that I've done it, we're now stuck on that becoming. And we now have to ignore the arising and the passing away of all phenomena. Let me read the Buddha's words on that again. Rooted in ignorance, it misunderstands self and becomes anything other than self. Becoming anything other than self, the world clings to becoming, is afflicted by becoming, and yet delights in that very becoming. We're delighted, we're enthralled with the process of keeping the self-referential ego self going, rather than letting it go and developing a life of lasting peace and happiness, rather than letting go of all of those self-referential views. Many people, when they first come to the Dhamma, the first thing that they are concerned about is, what happens to me when I let go of all those views? It feels like annihilation. But like the Buddha says in quite a few suttas, those views that we're holding of ourselves that seem so real and seems the most important thing in the world are like foam on the ocean. There's nothing there. There's no substance to it. Why? Because they're all impermanent views rooted in ignorance. Why hold on to it? Like Lao Tzu said, once you recognize the impermanence of all things, including these self-referential views, sanity will say, you'll let go of everything. Why hold on to something that is completely impermanent? Even going back to the Buddha's initial description of suffering, birth, sickness, aging, and death. Why hold on to any of that? There's nothing special about it. Every human being has those experiences, and there's nothing we can do about it. Every human life is prone to that. Simply by having a human life, they're going to occur. And that, a profound understanding of that, leads to, well, what's the purpose then? This is what set the Buddha out on his search in the first place. What's the purpose of all this if everybody is prone to birth, sickness, aging, and death? Primarily at that point, he was concerned with sickness, aging, and death. What's the point? And after 6 years of arduous study, doing some of the most incredible practices anybody could imagine, he came to the conclusion that the only purpose is to awaken, to stop his own contributions to his own ignorance and suffering. In the end, that's all that we can do, isn't it? Even the Dalai Lama said, the purpose of time is to awaken, not for anything else, to awaken. His path is a little bit different than what the Buddha taught, but...
To me, what you're saying is, when I was hot, tired, and hungry yesterday, I didn't apologize right away, but I see that apology as almost a people-pleasing thing, which is, I think, what you're talking about, is trying to always, you know, fit in or something like that. And instead, I said to the client, I'm hot, hungry, and tired. He kept pushing to do something else. We could do this while we're out. We could do this while we're out. And I said, no. And we stopped it and turned and went home. And what I saw in retrospect yesterday was I took care of myself. I took care of myself first. And that was important in taking care of him. Because if I was hot, hungry, and tired, their chances are he was more so.
Sure.
And to me, that's just a moment kind of a thing where awareness says, okay, that's an awakened kind of, I'm not saying I'm awakened or anything like that, but I'm just saying that that's a practical use of what awakening means, is taking care of.
Yes, and when you integrate the Eightfold Path, I was talking to someone last night, one of the online students. Once the Eightfold Path is integrated somewhat in our lives, it creates great freedom because we know now that our intentions are pure. So if your intention, and I know it wasn't, if your intention was to hurt this guy because he upset you, you need to apologize. If your intention is simply to state, right now I'm hungry, I'm tired, let's do something else right now. Even if that's not something that somebody else agreed with, it's not your intention to hurt anybody. You know? The framework of the Eightfold Path creates the freedom we want to live moment by moment in peace and happiness. Let me continue. I'm going to go back to that one line. Becoming anything other than self, the world clings to becoming, is afflicted by becoming, and yet delights in that very becoming. Where there is delight, there is fear, because the fear of this, whatever this is that's delighting me, is going to end. We know that everything is impermanent. Where there is delight, there is fear. Where there is fear, there is stress. Simple and direct, isn't it? My comment here. Fear arises from clinging to what is delightful and fearing the loss of what is delightful. The Buddha continues, the life integrated with the Eightfold Path is lived for the abandoning of becoming. Now, of course, he's talking about becoming more ignorant, becoming, creating a life, giving birth to a moment that is prone to more suffering. The life integrated with the Eightfold Path is lived for the abandoning of becoming. Those that say that escape from becoming is by non-becoming are never released from becoming. The Buddha concludes that with saying, I declare. So that points to a lot of things. One of the things that it points to is this overall notion of positive thinking. That, oh, no matter what's happening right now, the world is a beautiful place and I'm learning from it. Well, unless you're learning it in the right context, you're prone to continue that type of ignorance. But it also speaks to something a little bit... I don't want to get into all the ramifications of what that's saying, but there's a lot of teachings in many, many different religions that say that the suffering in this world will be paid back in the next world. In other words, if we suffer long and hard enough, the reward is going to be great joy and bliss in the next world. So, in other words, embrace your suffering rather than learn from your own contributions to suffering. That was a common teaching during the Buddha's time, by the way. He studied it and he rejected it. What the Buddha is trying to teach, and I think he did very successfully, is how to live a life of lasting peace and happiness here and now, not in some speculative life or some speculative heaven-type experience, which is also included in some of the Buddha's teaching, the modern Buddha's teachings. What's occurring in our life right now? What conditions are we creating in our life in this present moment that are taking away from our lasting peace and happiness? He continues, stress or dukkha arises in dependence on becoming a self rooted in ignorance. With the ending of clinging to self and maintaining a self, no stress will arise. Look at the world. Human beings afflicted with ignorance crave for and cling to becoming. All forms of becoming, anywhere, in any way, are impermanent, stressful, always subject to change. Knowing this, the arising and the passing away, from right view, craving for becoming and non-becoming is abandoned. What a powerful statement. As life unfolds, we're no longer craving for something that continues to reinforce me or gives me pleasure. And the craving for this moment, because now I'm disappointed, ends. That's just another identity.
What is that?
Let go of the need for anything to be different than it is, as it occurs. And you have created a life of lasting peace and happiness. How do we do that? Through the Eightfold Path. It's the only way we can do it. Now remember, the Buddha taught an Eightfold Path because upon his awakening, he considered if it was even possible to teach what he knew, to break through that veil of conditioned thinking, what he knew that every human being was afflicted with. How do I do it? And over 2 weeks of considering this, he realized and taught the Eightfold Path. To break through that constant becoming rooted in ignorance. Let me just check one thing. There's a comment in here that I'll just leave out because I'm talking a lot about it. The Buddha continues, from the abandonment of craving for becoming and non-becoming comes unbinding. What does that mean? Comes unbinding from clinging to all these self-referential views. When the Buddha described an awakened human being, he used that word, that person is unbound, as in unbound from clinging or released from clinging. For those unbound from lack of clinging and maintaining, there is no further becoming. Again, in the context, the modifier is no more becoming or giving birth to moments rooted in ignorance, prone to stress and suffering. There's no more of that becoming. They have conquered ignorance, completed the task, and have gone beyond becoming, meaning becoming a self rooted in ignorance. So that's the end of the Loka Sutta and my talk. if you're, I know all of you don't come to each class, you should though. Tuesday's class, we'll talk on the Bhava Sutta, which is a sutta where Ananda is frustrated. He says, tell me what this becoming means. It doesn't make any sense. And then Thursday, I'll conclude this series of three talks with the Mula Sutta. And they'll all be online.
All of these three are part of this particular newsletter that you sent?
Yes. Yeah.
Thursday's in Clinton?
No, here. I started
Tuesday on Thursday?
Yeah, you didn't know I was here. I started a couple months ago here on Thursday. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't make it clear. They said I'll make a point of announcing it again, just so everybody does know.
I'm sorry.
On Thursday. Pardon me?
What time is it on Thursday?
Same time, 7:15. Yep. Yeah, I might not even announce it.
You were in Clinton.
Yeah, I think it was maybe 3 months ago. I'm on Clinton now on the first Wednesday of each month, and I just give a basic lecture on meditation and mindfulness, as the Buddha taught it. Excuse me. So, any questions or comments? We'll go around the room. Jen, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Excuse me.
So there's two things that I kind of pulled out of all of this that I have found helpful. And the first is, this is a really meaty teaching because of all the words. Ignorance of, or becoming ignorant of the form of the truths. There's a lot of words in there that have all this meaning behind them. So it can get, like, you need to start drawing pictures and maps and taking notes to really kind of, for me, to really get a feel for what it really means. And but my bottom line home has been that it is abandoning being ignorant of impermanence, ignoring impermanence.
Yeah.
We want to ignore impermanence.
Yeah.
And everything, our minds will, are just the nature of our minds are such that we will continue to have this tendency to ignore the idea that we are not permanent and that we do not have ultimate control over our state of mind and our feelings and our sensations.
Yes.
So that's been
exactly
kind of a nice sort of thing to hold on to, I guess, or not hold on to.
Hold in mind.
Hold in mind, thank you.
Be mindful of.
And then the other thing was, I think I forgot, I know. It was a little bit. The two concepts of, well, just that there's two distinct pieces here. There's self-referential thoughts, and there's an ongoing process of thought.
Yes.
And those two things together kind of really create the suffering.
That's where we get stuck in it.
Right. And so I feel like what Diane was alluding to, or that what meditation does, is creates just a little pause or space in between those two things, so that when you have a self-referential thought, you don't immediately grab onto it and run away with it into a story.
Yeah.
That is also very helpful for me personally, because I see that the self-referential thoughts, often I can recognize them, then I immediately spin off into a story, and within the Eightfold Path, it's still a story and it's still pretty suffering. It's like I'm judging myself about what I'm thinking and having, you know, dragging this 15-year-old version of myself along with me, and, you know, That's another story. Yeah. So it's kind of nice to remember, okay, just abandon it. Just it's not something that you need to engage or work out or, problem solve or whatever.
Like we talked about on, I'm sorry, you finished?
That's it.
Thank you. Like we talked about on retreat in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, to recognize, don't get into an analysis of why I'm doing this or where am I wrong. This is not me. This is, if there's stress, if there's agitation, this is not me, this is not mine, this is not who I am. Move on to what's occurring in your life. And that the impermanence is what we talked about in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, but it's also one of the three marks of existence. Anatta, impermanence. Anicca, impermanence. Anatta, the not self characteristic, and the resulting dukkha, because we don't understand the interplay of the two. But yet we are all subject to all three of those. That's why they're called the three marks or the three characteristics of having a human life. It speaks directly to that. When Kandana awakened, hearing the first teaching, he said, "All conditioned things that arise are subject to cessation." He recognized on a very profound level the impermanence of all things. And he was awakened. Thank you. Eva, good to see you this morning.
After the repeated the positive links, and we've gone over the many times, and I've needed to read about them many times, but today I kind of felt that I understood, and I was able to compare or to refer them to my life as a referent, compare them to my life in certain situations, and it makes sense, and I like that there's a solution or something that my efforts are for.
And, yeah, that's important. That's outstanding. And it took a while. You know, most people don't get this the first 50 or 60 or 100 times you hear about dependent origination. But the more you can develop the broader understanding of what this whole thing is about, it fits into place. That's why I always say, you have to understand these within the context. If you could read the dependent origination was taught in the Paticca-samuppada sutta. You could read that one sutta every day for a million years, and if you didn't have the context, it wouldn't make any sense at all. Nothing in it would. But in the proper context and over time, you see how it all fits together. Thank you for bringing that. I'm glad you're here this morning. Lisa, good to see you this morning. How are you?
Hi, thanks.
Good.
Good to be here.
I'm glad you're here.
Well, first, I think I told Jay the wrong thing about what becoming was.
Uh-oh.
So, sorry. And I just had so many reactions to so many things you said. I didn't understand a lot of what you said, but, a little bit is coming through.
Yeah.
So I had all these reactions, and then Diane said something about, you have to take care of yourself first, or you can't help other people, and Jen just said something about creating this space, and so many things that you said, and, I just have such a jumble of thoughts. So I'm not sure about becoming. I think it's really pretty complicated, but I think that there is no word after it. That is the word. I don't know why I think that. I don't even understand it, but I think that that's what it is, and it's very hard to understand. But I also think, from what you said, it can go both ways. You can, becoming, you can keep going where you've been with all the stress and all bad stuff. But you could also go the other way with coming towards awakening.
Yeah. That's the important thing about it.
I think it go both ways.
Yep.
For me, I try to relate some of the things that you say people say to myself. And I have a lot of problems with anxiety. And I think that that is really, you know, rooted in, you know, the craving, the clinging, everything else.
It is.
And when I don't feel anxious, there's a space, because you said the word, there's a space that's created that things are really okay right now. And the other thing you said, Jen, was about dragging the 15-year-old. You know, that is so true because, you know, anxiety and things that get you down, me. So I'm remembering all the, if I did really bad things or said bad things or, dragging those chains, or dragging us down. And something about, you know, letting go. How to let go of all that. That's what Buddhism is. How to let go of all that. All that stuff we're dragging with us. And just be here and be okay with it. That's really hard.
Yes, but that you just described the essence of the Dhamma. And it seems hard only because of our own conditioned thinking. It really is very, very simple, but because we have such hardened views against seeing things clearly, it does seem very difficult. And so it is. I mean, that's our experience of it. But the end result is lasting peace and happiness. I don't know if I've ever talked about this, but not because I don't want to, but it's just I don't know that it ever came up. Many, many, many years ago, I was on, I can't remember the number, it was a lot, like 7 different mood-enhancing and anxiety-releasing or diminishing medications. And I was literally a walking zombie. And I remember, I knew that I couldn't continue my life that way. I have forgotten about this particular incident, but I remembered it when you were talking about it. I went to the psychiatrist that was overseeing my meds, and I told her, I said, I can't live like this. I need you to help me get off of them. And I still remember she kind of glared at me and said, you can't get off of these. You're going to be on these the rest of your life. And I said, I have to. She says, if you try, I can't be your doctor anymore. And I said, goodbye. And I slowly, and it probably was stupid, but it probably wasn't medically sane, but I slowly weaned myself off of those. But I had also started developing a somewhat useful meditation practice. I was in other traditions. And I'm not saying, I know I'm talking online to a lot of people too. I'm not advising anybody to stop their meds in this way. This is what worked for me, but I also realized it was pretty dangerous. But eventually, the point is that I was able to wean myself off of those medications. I started doing some other things, some certain herbs and eating better and all that stuff. But the primary thing that allowed me to eliminate all of that anxiety, and I was at the point where I couldn't answer the phone. I was so concerned about who might be there. I think that was before there was caller ID, but I couldn't open my mailbox. It's a long story, but the postal person it couldn't fit any stuff in the mailbox anymore, and they got into the habit of just throwing it at the base of the mailbox, and it was big piles of it because I just could not. That's how full of anxiety I was. I used to nail my door shut at night, afraid that people might. I mean, nobody's gonna. I've lived in a remote area, and again, I was as mentally sick as a person could be, I think, and still be out in the world. And eventually I was able to get off all of that. And the point that I'm making, the big speech, is that the most important thing, the most significant thing in healing my own, some people will say I haven't healed myself yet, but my own mental difficulties was this practice. And again, it's exactly how it should be. And again, I got to say, you know, to everyone, if you're on medication, don't just do that because that's dangerous, but can greatly help. Now, I've had a lot of students that talked about the anxiety that they're dealing with and depression, you know, the other side of that same coin, and this helped them greatly. Some were able to do the same thing, get off of medication. Some were able to diminish their medication. So, again, I'm not prescribing this in any way. I'm just saying that it can greatly help. And why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't it? You know, anxiety is simply an extremely self-reflective view of it, isn't it? Of what's going to happen to me next. And if we can diminish that self-reflective view, we're going to diminish the symptoms that follow from that. So, again, thank you for being here today. I think it'll help. Jay, good to see you.
Thanks.
Good morning.
I tried to read through the passages for today diligently. I had little luck understanding it, and I figured the best thing to do was to come and listen and hopefully become educated so I do understand it. I don't have much more to say than sometimes it's better to keep your mouth shut and listen. And that's something to do in this case. Try and figure it out.
I'm so glad you're here, and remember that it's not likely that you're here. I don't know that I'm that good of a teacher that you hear this once and get it. So it does take time and context to really understand. Yeah. The reason why I'm teaching this right now is that this came up even on retreat, and I realized that what I was presenting that I thought I was going to include in the retreat really wasn't enough, and so we had an additional discussion, and I included the Bhavan Sutta that I'll teach on Tuesday in the retreat because it is complicated. So the point I'm making is even in that context, a retreat where we're deeply immersed in the Dhamma, it can still be confusing. And most of the people that did come on this retreat were had quite a bit of Dhamma. I don't think anybody was, I would call them beginners or anything. They all had a pretty good, well-developed understanding of the context of these teachings. And that's real important. You know, and that's what takes time. It's not just one thing. You know, the Buddha taught an eightfold path and he gave 84,000 teachings over the course of his lifetime. All of those were situational, meaning there was either a group of people or an individual who was struggling with understanding. And so he presented a teaching that was situational there. But they all point to the Four Noble Truths. So. Glad you're here this morning. Diane, good to see you.
Thank you for being here and presenting these classes. For me, the bottom line is, I think what the Buddha was trying to say is you're okay. Deep inside you're okay. You just need to listen to that. And I think a lot of what I understand about me anyway, or my mind, is so much in my mind was all about pleasing other people. This is how you belong. This is how you fit in. This is how you do things. And, you know, you learn them from your mother and your mother and your father and your siblings and every teachers and school and all the whole thing. And then it's like you, when you come into this, you say, it's saying you let go of all that conditioned thinking. That's what conditioned thinking is, in my mind anyway, is the people-pleasing. Do what the world says to do. And it says to me, follow what is inside of you to do. What comes, just be still and listen. And that's the pause that I'm talking about, that listening, that pure, diluted, you know, uncontaminated nothingness, and it's not, you know, it's space, I guess, is where the answers are for my life. And and the rest is just like, you know, continuing to drop off these, let go of these other, you know, things and thoughts. And it's it's so contrary to what the world says. I mean, it's like the world is, you know, a big tsunami wave saying, no, you little ant, you know, this is not the way to be. And it's hard to, you know, face all these, you know, to stand up to the tsunami and say, I'm okay. You know, and then it's like when you do that, it's like the waves goes down, and it is okay, and it's not okay in a non-dukkha way kind of thing. It's just that the dukkha of the tsunami, when I acknowledge it and say, okay, I see you, and you are just a thought, you're not real, then it dissipates and there's no dukkha. I mean, anyway.
You don't contribute to your own.
Yeah.
Thank you. The metaphor of the tsunami is metaphor for ignorant self-referential views. And the Buddha describes those as like foam on the ocean. You know, so that big tsunami is like foam on the ocean. There's nothing there. When you stand up to it, now, I know you didn't mean it this way, but just for clarity's sake, the Buddha didn't just say that you're okay. What he said was that your views of yourself are wrong views rooted in ignorance that would create suffering for your life. But if you let go of all those wrong views through the Eightfold Path, you'll be okay. You'll be fine. You'll be good to go moment by moment. So, thank you, Diane. Lorna, good to see you this morning.
Thank you. I think this teaching in my time of life, which is where I am with the Dharma right now, is just perfect timing. Because I have been thinking more of my thoughts and the eye-making and the judgment that you do and all that sort of stuff. And just realizing how you can get into you know, negative thinking or thinking outside the Four Noble Truths. And just be going on and just going on, and you're just wallowing your unhappiness, and you just kind of sit there, but not sit there always, but you know, it just goes on. It's hard to change your thoughts when you get in that cycle. It's really difficult. Even if you come back to your breath, that might last 3 seconds, and then you're back in your samsara again, and you know, this. And I think even there seems to, I mean, we all know about it strikes me as like the pull of the North Pole. We all know that there's North, the magnetic North, and there is that pull of the Earth of North. It seems that my mind wants to be drawn into samsara. It just wants to be there. You can look at it even in your meditation, sometimes, you know, you set a timer, you're going to meditate 20 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever. And sometimes, at the end of your time, you think, I could just sit here forever. And sometimes you think, thank goodness that's over with. You know, because that gives you a release to go back into samsara. Mm. It's hard to stay in right view. It's hard to stay within the Four Noble Truths and within the Buddha's teachings. It's hard to stay there. And it's hard to understand when you believe in it, you want it, you admire the Buddha and his teachings, and you know, you just, someone said, I'm gooey about the teachings, you know, that's me and yet I'm pulled back into the samsara. It's difficult to understand, but you just have to believe that's from your teachings. It's comforting in a way that it's okay, because that I'm on the path, and that will happen. And as I said, this is probably the perfect timing for me, because I'm at the point of, or I feel since the retreat, I'm at the point of looking at me, I'm thinking in a little more depth and a little bit more specifically, and putting my thinking to my feelings at the time, etc., etc. So I think this teaching's just, you know, this 3-session teaching is just going to be a really good timing right now. And then just one thing from the retreat. I feel that I've understood in a deeper level a lot of what the Buddhist teachings are, and I just understand more in more detail. I understand right, the purpose of right speech more. I understand the purpose of meditation more. I understand that it's just, you know, it's sort of everything and impermanence. And before the retreat, I would have said, I'm beginning to trust impermanence into my judgment. And now I think that impermanence is my happy book. You know, I can see how impermanence is present in my life in everything. And from the vision of seeing it impermanent, seeing impermanence, much more things are much more easily tolerable than if I hadn't have seen that, if I hadn't have known that. You know, it's just that overarching vision that, and I think I see impermanence now as like, as I say, it's like my happy button. Instead of an easy button like Staples had the easy button for the advertisement, which is my happy button. You know, it's made of
permanent.
Yeah. but as I say, I've just all of the Buddha teachings are making, not that they didn't make sense before, but I understand them all a little bit deeper and hold their value a lot more clearer in my mind since the retreat. So,
thank you. You said a lot. Jen, it's just 10 o'clock. You said that you needed,
yeah,
you needed
I know.
To go.
I'm
so
still
going to
be late. That's fine.
Great. I just want to let you know.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. It's taken a few weeks, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But not an eternity. Really, I mean, you've been, I think you started coming around 2 years ago, and you've taken to the Dhamma as whole. You've taken to it wholeheartedly, and you've developed it to the point now where you're seeing things very clearly. But and I'm just using it as an example. That's how it's done. Again, the Buddha taught something for human beings to develop in this lifetime. And that doesn't mean it needs to take a whole lifetime. In a very short period of time, we develop the ability to start living very very meaningful lives of deep mindfulness and concentration. That happens pretty quick. And then over time, we gain insight. This is true insight. The insight that we're looking for and that you're describing is insight into the three marks of existence, into impermanence, not self, and resulting dukkha. What else, you know, that's the whole, it's the whole salami. What else would be looking for insight to? And the reason why I'm saying there's a lot of stuff that's, you know, gain insight into washing the dishes or eating a grape. Well, that's great to be mindful of doing that, but that's not real insight into impermanence and what we're talking about. It can be just a distraction. And then you when you came this morning, you said that what I was going to teach today doesn't have, you can't make heads or tails of it. And now you can.
Yeah.
And again, it's not because I'm the world's greatest teacher. It's because you see it in the context and following the retreat where we develop the broader context in a few days. So that's how it works. Thank you. Debbie, good to see you this morning. How are you?
Good to be back. Good. I wanted to just clarify something about this three-part teaching. So you're going to do it today, Tuesday, and Thursday? Or is it going to be each Saturday?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for that. Tuesday will be the next part two, and then next Thursday will be part three. And if you can't make it, I'm going to, it'll be recorded on YouTube, and also put the recorded talks up shortly after the class too. But I hope you can join.
So I just wanted to clarify that, and I just related to a lot of people have said, and what Jim said is kind of bottom line, the impermanence. We've talked about that a couple of times. That's a real good takeaway. And so many thoughts and just come and go. I guess for me, by your going over the dependent origination today, it was good because I felt like I was getting a little better clarification of that. And I feel like, right, you know, because I wasn't, we didn't have this last week, I feel like it was good timing for me too, because I feel like I've been more pulled back into the self-referential thinking I'm making. And so all of that was really helpful today, right timing for me. Is there such a thing as right timing?
Sure. that's the ninth factor of the Eightfold Path.
Anyway, so it's been really helpful today, and I think of it as how I need that consistency, that structure, to help keep me on track. You know, and I have been good about my meditation. I mean, it has kept me on track some, but I just see myself falling into it. So anyway, this has been really helpful today.
Thank you. I'm so glad you came, Debbie. And it really is difficult, if not impossible, to develop this on our own. You know, we really need the support of a sangha. You know, and again, you know, it's not just me. You know, it's remarkable to me, and we're very fortunate what's grown up here in Frenchtown. It was reflected on our retreat too. If you listen to the talks, you'll see how much we all contributed to an amazing retreat. Can't do it alone, and that consistency of immersion in the Dhamma is so important too, because that draw, you know, is so strong to just say, you know, I'm too busy or silly, I can't apply it to myself, whatever the reasons conditioned thinking comes up, tries to divert us and continue ignorance is so strong. But I'm glad you're here, Mary. Good to see you this morning. How are you?
Good to be here. I started to do the reading last night, but didn't get all the way through it. But hearing the talking, it makes so much sense to me. And I, you know, I'm looking out here at the river going by and thinking, all right, it comes, it goes, it comes, it goes. And it's so true with everything. And, you know, this whole group of classes has helped me to be able to say, I feel horrible right now. I'm in the depths of despair. But then the little voice, is this not going to last? You know, this is not going to last. And it doesn't. Look at that. and, you know, and to try to take, I mean, the old saying, take the good with the bad, and know that everything is going to just keep moving on, like the river.
Yeah.
It just keeps moving. And, you know, I think that the most content people in the world are the ones who are able to take it, enjoy it, let it go, take it, suffer with it, let it go, and not carry it around on your back like a little monkey. You gotta keep letting it flow. Because that's life.
Yeah. Thank you. The arising and the passing away. It's not, and so you don't, it doesn't need a modifier, does it? At least in this, the arising and passing away of what? The arising and passing away. All things do it, and that the river, it's significant for a few reasons. That's one of the reasons why it's in the name, you know, Cross River Meditation Center. It implies that idea that everything is flowing. What's that? You can't step in the same river twice.
Yeah.
You know, and it also relates to the another kind of misapplication of the word stream enterer, which simply means that once you've entered the stream, meaning you start to develop the Eightfold Path, as long as you maintain the framework of the Eightfold Path, you're going to stay in the stream. And the ending is assured. The result, the awakening is assured, as long as we stay in the stream. That's the true meaning of a stream enterer. And by the way, you're all stream enterers. The challenge is keep it up.
And then you can see that even if you don't end up with the awakening, it just makes the whole process of going through life easier.
I almost jumped out of my seat because you reminded me. There was a time when I was trying to decide, you know, I was really on the fence of wholehearted engagement in this, or is it just another, because I tried everything out there, you know, all the crazy stuff and some not so crazy, but led me nowhere. And I remember having the thought, when I finally understood what the Buddha was teaching, it said, even if this doesn't lead to the goal that he's promised, it's just a much better way to live my life. And that was enough to really engage in it wholeheartedly.
Yeah. You know? And I don't understand why more people don't, well, I guess maybe they don't stick with it long enough to realize that, you know, centimeter by centimeter, it is making your life better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. Well, you know, we are so addicted to quick fixes, quick ideas to change it, or, you know, medications or drugs or, you know, more golf or more knitting, anything that gets us out of it makes us feel like it, you know, I feel better, so that must be good. And we just stay in that self-referential and confused thinking, the feedback loop. This gets you right there. It takes a little effort. But the end is assured. We're all stream mentors today. So, any other questions or comments?
One more comment.
Yes.
Psychiatrists are trained to push drugs. That's the way
they're trained. A good point. I'm glad you said it, because I can't.
But it's the reality.
Yeah, it is. And again, it doesn't mean that all psychiatrists have one thing in mind, but that's really what's developed.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get into something else. I always get myself in trouble. There'll be an email or two about that. Most everyone, especially in the health field, is well-intentioned and sincere in what they believe. Part of the problem is the same problem in the whole world. There's ignorance there. You know, we really don't understand. And when you have people, one person after another, begging you for instant relief, it's hard not to say, here, take this. You know, it's really hard. On the other hand, we need to take responsibility for what we're doing. It's an aspect of right livelihood. So thank you for bringing that up, Mary. Again, any questions? Lisa, I'm sorry.
Well, I know this is really trite, but when you said about, well, it's the journey, not the destination. Life is a journey. You know, I know it's just been said a million times, and it's so trite, but I guess it's true, because we're not going to get probably to awakening, but we're on a path, you know, like the journey, the path.
Yeah.
It's life, and it's Buddhism, and it's learning. And just like our path, well, okay, nobody gets out of here alive, so it's not like we all want to get there. No, we want to live our life.
Yeah.
That's the end.
Yeah. That you're so right there, but we can get there, and many of us will get there. I would say most of us, as long as we engage wholeheartedly in the path. But the important thing is a Pali word, mudita, M-U-D-I-T-A, which means we take great joy just in the fact that it's here. And I think it's remarkable that after 2,600 years and all the attempts to change it, mostly successful, that the pure teachings are still here. And we can take great joy in that this works. And again, even if it just makes our lives a little better right now, that's enough, because there's not really much out there that will do that in a realistic way. You know, so yeah, we should take great joy in this. We're so fortunate that we have this. And that, I mean, one of the ways that I look at that, and it's not that I have any kind of special way of thinking or a special mind or a special intellect, I'm ordinary. But yet my mind can develop these teachings. I've developed a way. I mean, it's laid out in the Eightfold Path in the teachings, but I can develop this for myself. I can have a profound effect on my life. I'm not miserable and angry anymore. You know?
You had a speck of dust.
Maybe just a speck of dust. That's what Buddha said, is to put that in context. When the Buddha was trying to decide if he should teach, he came to this realization that even if there's just a few human beings with just a speck of dust in their eyes, meaning they're almost there anyway, maybe this will nudge them in the right direction. Of course, that was a very conservative way of looking at things. There's been many, many millions of people that have developed this over time. So, thank you for a great class. We'll finish with the Metta Sutta like we always do. And just, I guess, two quick announcements. I'll have the this past retreat talks up and the pictures. We had a really good photographer up there. Today, that all the pictures will be up and the talks will be up probably today or tomorrow, and right after that I'll have the registration up for our October retreat. So hopefully you can join us then. So find your relaxed meditative posture and gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And again, take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body, and let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past, or to the future, or that may have arisen from our talk today. And metta is both an aspiration for those of us developing the Eightfold Path and an ongoing expression of an awakened, fully mature human being. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class. Peace. Thank you, Jen. Thank you for listening. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for guided meditations and instruction and Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos. We rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Please feel free to contact me through crossrivermeditation.com. Peace.